Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Chapter 1. How all Cuban smuggling stories begin. A conversation with Michael Flatley. This is Gary Hyde. He's a boxing manager. At the bottom of his garden in Cork, there is a large building. It's his very own boxing gym.
So welcome to our gym. See what all happens.
There is a Cuban flag hanging above the boxing ring.
You know, and it's right, when I start saying we're Cuban all of a sudden, you know, but we actually do love the Cuban fighters, of course.
On the wall, there is a poster of the first fight that he ever promoted. Billy Walsh against Miroslav Kubik. At the stage, he was a successful businessman. He ran a number of pubs in Cork, but he wanted to get into boxing, become a manager.
But back then, I had no idea. I was like, yeah, flights from Belfast down here, 6 flights for you and 5 flights for you. And yeah, well, from Dublin, Ash, you know, I'm going on through two toll bridges, flights down for you as well, you know, so.
When the final bell rung, Gary had lost 30,000 euro of his own money. That's a lot of Cuban pesos.
The show cost about 55,000 euros and maybe we made 25,000 on the door.
He went backstage trying to hide his discomfort. His guest of honour was there.
So my guest of honour on the night was Michael Flatley.
Yes, that Michael Flatley, Riverdance, Lord of Dance.
He came up and he had this white shirt wide open down as far as his navel. So I said, Michael, what did you think of the show, you know? Kind of fishing for him to say, oh, it was the most amazing show I've ever been to in my whole life.
But Michael Flatley didn't say that. He said it was a really good show, well put together, well matched. But the people need someone you can get behind from the very start, who can possibly go all the way. You need to go to one of the poor houses of the world. Find yourself a champion.
That second, the minute he said it, I thought, Russia, Cuba, Rigondeaux.
And that was that. Following one conversation with Michael Flatley, 2 weeks later, Gary Hyde would be in Havana. Chapter 2. El.
You know, Lawrence of Arabia, he's asked why he went out to the desert, and Peter O'Toole says, because it's clean. All people who are drawn to Cuba, it's exactly the opposite. It's because it's dirty. That's why we go. Because everybody's life is at the extremes.
While Gary Hyde was Googling Cuba, boxers, and defections, Breen Jonathan Butler was living in Havana.
I was just training with Finan, very ordinary day.
He's an American writer and a keen boxer, and moved to Cuba to train here at the Rafael Trejo gym with ex-Olympic champion Hector Banent.
And suddenly the gym just went dead silent, and I heard whispers of L is here. And L, if a Cuban refers to it, which is the Spanish word for him, invariably refers to Fidel Castro. But as I was sort of looking around to see where is this L, Venant said, you know, don't look now, but the greatest boxer who's ever lived is in the doorway. And I turned around immediately because I'm, you know, kind of clumsy. And I didn't see anybody except what looked like a street kid who was in the doorway, and he was smoking a cigarette in the shadows underneath the bleachers. And I said, I don't see anybody except that kid. And I say a kid because Guillermo is 5'5", 120 pounds. And Fennin said, no, that's Guillermo Rigondeaux. And he was L. When I looked, I got, oh, my God, it's him. You know, he was puffing away on a cigarette, which is not what you're exactly used to with a two-time Olympic champion. And I went over and introduced myself. And he was polite, and he smiled. And as he smiled, I noticed the gold grill over his teeth was gleaming. And just to break the ice, I asked him where he got the gold that was over his front teeth. And he kind of chuckled and just said, well, I melted my two gold medals into my mouth.
Chapter 3, A Word of Warning. This is the Rafael Trejo gym in Havana, world famous. It is decrepit and battered. 2 years after the revolution, Fidel Castro banned professional sports. That's why 44 years later, the greatest boxer to have ever lived earns 20 bucks a month.
The most famous Cuban face after Fidel Castro is a boxer, which would be Teofilo Stevenson. So if you look at the succession, the kind of continuum of great Cuban boxers, it goes Teofilo Stevenson, the next captain was Felix Sabon, and Felix Sabon handed over his captaincy to Guillermo Rigondeaux. So he was the logical successor to that mantle of the crown jewel of Cuban sport. I think I wouldn't say he was friends with Fidel Castro, but yeah, he did tell me that he met Castro on many occasions. Castro was a big boxing fan, and the symbolic value of boxing in Cuba is that, you know, for such a small country, you know, small population, no money, the Cuban team was totally dominant over the Americans. And I think Castro was saying, you know, our fighters fight for something more meaningful than just money. And it was one thing for Castro's champions to defeat all the Americans during the Olympics. I think their most successful Olympics was in the Barcelona Games. But the real coup de grace was then, after defeating the Americans, to then turn down millions to leave. And, you know, to say, as Stevenson said, what's $1 million for the love of 8 million Cubans?
Chapter 4. Going on the lash on the Falls Road. So the morning after the night he talked with Michael Flatley, Gary Hyde is hunched over his computer.
I remember distinctly the next morning, maybe 7 a.m., checking out about Rigondeaux, researching him big time. I knew a lot about him and knew all about his fights that he had over the years, but I wanted to find out, where's he at now? Where, you know, how am I going to get to him?
You are probably wondering why that very second Gary Hyde thought of Guillermo Rigondeaux. Well, they had met before, 6 years earlier. In 2001, the World Championships were held in all places, Belfast.
Guillermo Rigondeaux from Cuba in the blue shirt.
Guillermo Rigondeaux was there.
So I went up to him thinking it even passed my mind that I was going to be a manager, boxing manager, promoter or anything.
Gary Hyde was there.
Southpaw could turn out to be one of the stars of these championships.
You know, the first time I saw him was like just at weigh-ins. We got access to the weigh-ins at one stage, and we saw all the Cubans like going from the smallest up to the biggest.
Gary and his friends followed the Cubans around.
And then we just got talking to him. Maybe 2 or 3 days, we would have saw him every day. And then they were saying, come on down to us. And they had cigars and stuff like that. They were selling cigars. Yeah, and their tracksuits as well. They were selling their tracksuits as well. And then we were like, so come on, let's go. We said the third night, then we would have met up with him. You know, they came out with us then, you know. So
and he started very, very fast against a good opponent in Tsujimoto of Japan.
They bought cigars. They were fun. They arranged to go out.
We just went up the Falls Road, just different bars in the Falls Road. Tony Dunlop now is the guy that brought us up, you know, and he knew exactly where we'd be well welcome, you know. And he'd sip the night before a fight, he'd no problem at all, but drink, pour a bottle of vodka or something. He would sip away, he'd like sipping with a straw, and he'd have a nice little drink, he would, yeah.
And he's really gone looking for him from the word go. Look at those body shots thundering. A couple of really solid right hooks to the body from Rigondeaux.
I knew Agua and Ola. That was it. And he had Belfast 2001. That's all he knew. But we just got on brilliant. I mean, he was just a car. He was having his own jokes. He was telling his jokes, and all the lads in the Falls Road were laughing. And he thought he was brilliant, but shit, nobody understood anyone. But you get the vibe off him. He just got a fantastic aura about him.
They went out again, and then went out a third night.
He's 5'4", you know, so he's a slight guy. But if he comes into the room and I'm 6'3", and he's next to me, people would get out of his way, but they wouldn't take any notice of me.
6 years later, Guillermo Rigondeaux, I didn't know it at the time, but he was going to see Gary Hyde again. This time in Havana. Chapter 5. The Notebook and Pen.
I made up the plan really on the when I booked for the flights. I made up the plan then of when I was on the plane. You know, and I decided to go over there and just pose as the pretense of as a boxing writer.
For every Cuban athlete that he would speak to about the idea of defecting, at a minimum, he would be looking at 10 years in prison. And he spoke to many Cuban athletes. So Gary Hyde is the kind of person who looked at that as a challenge and as an adventure.
He got the props he needed, a notebook and a pen.
And we got straight on the job then the next morning, like 10 o'clock, we started searching around to the boxing gyms and we knew the names of the places to go.
He paid some people in the gym for information.
One of the boxers in the gym, who got maybe $20 or $50 off us, he called the school. He spoke to Regan though, and he made an arrangement for us to meet him in some restaurant right in the main square in Cuba. And that's what happened.
It was here, in Parque Central, that Gary Hyde met Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Oh, he was screaming, straight away screaming, and he lets off a little squeak. He'd be moving down, making noises like that, and throwing the arms around me, and then he would exaggerate then that he missed, you know. He's a player then that way, you know. He would exaggerate that he missed Jim. Where have you been, and why didn't you come to see me before, and all this, you know. So within the first 20 minutes of talking with him, he was telling us, so how's your career going? I'm watching you. You won acting since I met you last. And you know, like, you can imagine even the conversation. I mean, since the last time I met you, you won another gold medal in Athens, you know, in the Olympics. And then he said, yeah, and I'm going to be the first to win 4 gold medals. So he was going to be 4-time Olympic champion. And that's we kind of sank that night then, you know. We're kind of disappointed and thinking, like, okay, what's plan B, you know, if Rigondeaux doesn't come out, you know. So then as the night went on, maybe an hour or so later, he was saying he wanted to go professional. He wanted me to manage him and take him away and get TV deals. And he had no idea about how it works, you know, but he said he wants to be a world champion and he's going to be a superstar. And come on, let's go. And I thought, yeah, I knew this would be easy. You know, I was obviously delighted now, thinking like, oh, flipping. No, that's the first part of the plan. Now, next is get a contract, you know. And then once the contract is sorted, then get him out. You know, so like we only had the first part of 3 parts, really.
Gary Hyde reached out to another Cuban fighter, Mike Perez. He was a junior world champion.
He won the gold medal, stopped everybody on his way to winning it. And then in 2005, he boxed Kenny Egan, our own silver medalist from Beijing. And he beat Kenny Egan, like, massive amount of points, like 32-12 or something like that. Crazy amount of points. And I said, if somebody can do that to Kenny Egan, and his kid was only 18, I said, we want him as well, so we get him. So I reached out for him in the very, very same way, exact same way as Rigondeaux. Everything was exactly the same, only that Perez said, I'm going now. I'm ready to go now. I want to go to Ireland today. You know, so we signed him up the day after I met him.
He had 2 professional contracts. He didn't want them on him if he was stopped going through the airport.
Well, no, I didn't leave with the contracts. Carlos, my friend, went to DHL and he sent the contracts home. And we tracked the contracts. And when we saw the contracts were, say, in Mexico, then we were comfortable that we're not going to get caught with a contract waved in front of us at the airport. They were on the way back to my house anyway. so, but they were signed. You know, I know the 2 boys were signed and we had the first part of the job done.
Chapter 6, Family.
Yeah, it's Tommy Hyde in his Sunnyside outfit. You know that he boxed for Sunnyside.
On the wall of the boxing gym, there is an old black and white photograph of Gary's uncle.
He's just standing with a curtain draped behind him, and he's standing on a carpet in a portrait, and he's leaning forward on his left leg. He passed away in my hands. Well, he was passing away in his last few minutes. Then I was calling his name out in the National Stadium when the Irish senior champion and the welterweight champion for 1946 in the red corner from the Sunnyside Boxing Club in Cork, Tommy Hyde.
Gary's married and has 5 children.
Hello.
How are you?
That's Fiona. That's my wife.
I'm not going to your stuff there now.
Gary Hyde had 30 people working under him at the time that he could have sent over to talk to Guillermo, talk to athletes, be fixers, set up contact. I mean, there was a lot of very safe ways to approach this, but Gary said, why would I let somebody else have this adventure? You know, I'm the one who's thought of it. I'm the one who wants to, you know, take this ride. And for me, that was one of the major strange points of the entire story is anybody can understand why Guillermo was torn about staying or leaving with his wife and kids and the money awaiting him in the United States and all of that. It's Gary Hyde, who's very wealthy, very established, has a wonderful family, who would leave 5 kids behind and face potentially never seeing them again because he'd be locked up in a Cuban prison for an adventure. Yet it was almost like he couldn't take it seriously. I mean, I'm sure he did take it seriously, but he couldn't stop laughing as he was detailing all of the obstacles and challenges and risks.
Yeah, there's some things you're better off not knowing about, really. You know? you know, don't tell her. There's no pillow talk anyway in this one, you know. So, you know, so when I was talking about going to Cuba, like, I wasn't going to say, like, oh, this could end up with me, like, getting a lot of time in a Cuban prison. Like, and say, why would you do that? Like, and everything's going so well for you. But she had no idea that Cuban fighters can't leave in a plane with me. You know, she didn't know like that we were talking about getting him out some other way, you know. So, even at that time, I didn't know how I was going to get him out, you know, but I was going to get him out.
Chapter 7. The Old Fisherman from Cork and the Sea. These are the sounds of the harbour in Havana. There is a heavy security presence. In 2007, a Cork fisherman was going to arrive here.
At that stage, Rigondeau didn't want to leave. He said he'd come back to me and he'd let me know when he wants to leave. But he's not going yet. But Perez was, from the second he met me, he was going now, Mike Perez. He was going right now and he went, let's do it. You know, and he was saying, pronto, 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 pronto. Every time I'd come on the phone to him, all he was saying, soon, 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 soon. So at that stage then, I had to park up Rigondeau and I had to leave him to one side because he wasn't ready to go. So, like, it's no point getting the logistics right if the fighter didn't want to go. I had him on contract, but that contract doesn't get in the board and leave and all that. And I came up with one great idea. I got a guy that I know, who is a fisherman. He's old, like, he's in his 70s, and he knows his way around the sea, like, you know. And I said, I'm going to talk to him. I says, and see, will he venture over there and take him up? No problem, he says, no problem. It's just involved a bit of getting on the sea and that with a boat. Oh, that's my business there. I said, you have to go to the Bahamas and then come across. There was no issue whatsoever. And he rented a fishing boat and he went across to Cuba. He was 73 back then, so, like, if he's still alive, like, he's 80 now. Mm. I thought it mightn't even happen. Next thing, he phones me and he says, I'm here with your man. Oh, he says, and he likes a few drinks. So Mike Perez, like, was off season. He's not boxing. He got kicked off the team because they got suspicious. And he got kicked off the Cuban team, so he's having a few drinks with the Corkman. And the Corkman is 72. Mike Perez is 20. One is white, one is black. And, you know, you just don't see them together. Like, you know, so he's telling me, like, that I'm here now with Joe Felices. And he's fond of a few drinks, he says. You know, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's grand. Don't worry about that. Get him on a boat and get him out of there. And he was in an apartment with Mike Perez for maybe 2 weeks. He doesn't speak a word of Spanish either, you know, and Mike Perez at the time didn't speak any English. So he was in the apartment with him over there, and he was seeing how he'd get him out, and he was thinking of running him down at night time and bringing him up, but he said he couldn't do it with the security. And then he went up the coast a bit, and he reckoned he could do it there.
While the fisherman and Mike Perez waited, Gary went to Mexico. He met someone who knew someone who knew someone who put him in touch with somebody. Whatever they were criminal.
They phoned me. I said, "Hi, Mike, we got your fighter."
A Mexican gang carried Mike Perez across on a speedboat.
This guy said, "I got your fighter." And I said, where are you now? And he says, "We're in Cancun." I said, "Can I speak to—" I knew they were after picking him up. But they picked him up. They were 3 days underwater. 3 days on the sea. What happened was the Navy ship was berthed in Cancun, and they couldn't come ashore. When I got there, I met Mike, and he was destroyed. He'd like 100, 150, 200, maybe 2,000 mosquito bites. All his face, all his body, all his hands down. They would just eat alive mosquitoes, because they were out there for 2 days, and they ran out of fresh water as well. So they were out in the boat for 2 days, and they couldn't come ashore. And he was just ate alive by the mosquitoes, you know, 24/7. He was in a bad way from that. But like, I just threw my arms around him, and it was like he was like my long lost son, you know. I had my arms around him, and well, he went straight into a jacuzzi then, because he was like covered in salt water and bites. So he was in a jacuzzi, and I was just sitting down watching him in this it was actually a jacuzzi in the room of the hotel. And he was splashing in the— there was like suds, you know, like a foam party. It was suds everywhere, and he was never in a jacuzzi before. But and the black guy then as well, and everything, he comes up in the white foam everywhere, and the black guy, and I'm thinking, oh, we cracked it. So he was the first one to come out on a speedboat, first boxer.
So Gary Hyde had one boxer, but things were to get a lot more complicated for Guillermo Rigondeaux. Chapter 8. Everything went to hell in Brazil.
Bien. Mi nombre es Jorge Hernández. Yo tuve todos los títulos del boxeo como tal.
This is Jorge Hernández. He was Guillermo Rigondeaux's boxing coach. He talks on the terrace of his home. He remembers the poor boy Guillermo from coffee growing area who came to Havana. They had much success until the two-time Olympic champion went to a tournament in Brazil. Defections didn't happen on the island itself. It usually happened far, far away at international competition.
Yeah, just everything went to hell in Brazil.
They were at the tournament when Guillermo Rigondeaux and another boxer disappeared. They were missing for 2 weeks. And they turn up. Guillermo returned home in disgrace.
You know, so I was in contact with him a lot at that time. I made contact with him just after that and asked him what it was all about, and he denied that he was signed with anyone, you know, which, you know, he denied everything that to me about signing with anyone in Brazil. But he just said that he went to a party and he came back late for he was supposed to come out for the finals of the Pan American Games, and that he never got back in time, and then he was afraid to come back because he was late.
Guillermo's attempt at defection, I think, in Brazil in 2007 represented not just a turning point in Cuban sport, but in Cuban society on the whole.
When Rigondeaux returned to Cuba after the failed defection, Fidel Castro publicly announced that he was a traitor, and that by deserting the team in the championship was the same as a soldier leaving his comrades on a battlefield, that he was a deserter and that he was a traitor.
I think it'd be fair to characterize it as a national soap opera. It was on the news every day. The population at that time, the majority of the population, even though they were not legally permitted to voice this feeling, was sympathetic for all of his reasons to leave. Doesn't mean they weren't torn by that decision. I mean, Guillermo was leaving a wife and two kids behind, but I think overall they were sympathetic. And that sent shockwaves across Cuban society. And I think that's why Fidel Castro, despite being ill and, you know, not publicly seen, made a point to personally brand Guillermo a traitor so that people would have total clarity about what his position was on the matter and also to instill, I think, a threat that if anybody followed suit with what Guillermo and Laura had attempted to do, that the punishment would be totally severe.
So he was kicked off the Olympic team for Beijing in 2008, which is August, and then he was back on rations. Everything was taken off him. The money he was getting every month, he didn't get that anymore, and then he was told he'd never travel out of Cuba again.
Once he was thrown off the team in 2007, yeah, he was drinking the high percentage beer that was available, and he was chain smoking as he sort of stared out of his little duplex.
He was very depressed, very down himself. I mean, Rigondeaux was very down after he came back from Brazil. He had nothing. I mean, his pride possession was a car that he got after the Olympics. It was a Mitsubishi Lancer. He never had any fuel for it, but it was his pride possession at the time. And they took that back, took his car back off him.
Yeah, it was disastrous. But he was completely ostracized in Cuban society and under 24-hour surveillance. And all of his teammates and coaches were forbidden to speak with him. So he was completely ostracized. And even people who lived next door to him would ignore him on the street. I mean, he was one of the most notorious defectors, unsuccessful defectors in Cuban history since the revolution began. So he was in a terrible, terrible spot.
Chapter 9, The Ghost of Guillermo. At a park in Havana, some bald men argue about who was the greatest fighter. Some mention the name Rigondeaux. In the boxing gyms around Havana, people are reluctant to talk about Guillermo Rigondeaux. You can record the noises they say, but we can't talk about him. One day people woke up and Guillermo Rigondeaux was gone.
It was everywhere. It was everywhere. Rigondeaux was out and write-ups everywhere, and the internet was on fire with Rigondeaux was out.
He had crossed the Florida Straits.
In February 2009, these people in Miami brought out Rigondeaux, and they brought it on the same route and the same people that I used to get my guy out.
A Mexican gang on a speedboat.
I was quite happy that everybody was coming out, but if the fighter I was signing was coming out using the route that I set up, well, then, of course, I'd be upset about that, and that's what happened.
Guillermo.
Buenas tardes a todos.
Like to what?
Ya yo no soy mucho de hablar. Ya la preparación está bastante 100%, ya lo que queda prácticamente es pelear.
Because I was the one that went for him, was I the one that signed him from the beginning. I went off to Cuba and I got him and I signed him, and he liked what he heard, and we liked what we heard with each other, and we had a good relationship, and I signed him. So if I signed him, and now he's out because of my mode of transport, and I'm his contracted manager, well then I have to fight for that then. If I don't, they'll come and take the rest of my fighters.
Gary Hyde believes they use his route. Guillermo Rigondeaux crossed the shark-infested waters and into the world of professional boxing, dunking, and endless litigation. The safest place for him was the center of a ring.
And you know, Guillermo Rigondeaux is Cuba Libre, you know, and that's for fighting for freedom for Cuba. They had to escape.
Bullying me, without a doubt, they were bullying me, thinking like Don King had a paperwork for some while, for a couple of weeks, and he sold the contract to Kariba, and he told Kariba that some Irish guy who knows nothing about boxing says he has paperwork on him, but he says but don't take any notice of that.
Down in Florida, he had to get on the boats, the rafts, and brave the hazards of the ocean and the shark-infested waters to seek freedom.
There were competing interests to get Guillermo off the island. He was very aware of how perilous a journey it was to escape. And of course, let's remember, it's smugglers' boats that are taking him out. He, as a Cuban athlete, is the most expensive human cargo on Earth, because if he washes ashore anywhere else but Cuba, he is worth millions of dollars to whoever is in control of him.
He
And where do they seek that freedom? With Old Glory right here. This is the only country in the world that people try to break in rather than to break out.
Regan, though, as I said, he don't lie. He's an honest person. He can't look in somebody in the eye and tell them a lie. It's not his makeup. But he'd run with the hare and chase with the hounds. This kid had won gold medals and had to sell cigars in ones and twos to make an earning.
The joke in Cuba from people I spoke to was that Guillermo, along with many of the other Olympic champions, signed more contracts to leave Cuba than they did autographs.
None whatsoever. The court said, did you sign on such a date? Yes. And did Rigondeaux sign? Yes. And Rigondeaux agreed in an affidavit that he did sign in that date in 2007. He agreed in the affidavit that he did sign. And so that was basically the nuts and bolts of the case.
It is not often that a four-round pro debut fight ends up getting co-feature status, but when it's one of the best amateur fighters of this generation turning pro, things change. Guillermo Rigondeaux has been waiting for this moment, and now he'll face Juan Noriega to start a career many feel is destined to be dynamic. For most Cuban amateur stars, a moment like this will never arrive. Years of sweat and sacrifice go into becoming a world-class fighter, yet the reward attached to that risk isn't always there. Now for Rigondeaux, the sky's the limit. Free from communism and diving headfirst into the pure, raw marketplace of pro boxing.
Chapter 10. Family. Again. I suppose you could say this is a story of two men. One who risked his life with his family to smuggle Cuban boxers, and the other, a Cuban boxer who left his family. Brian Jonathan Butler visits Guillermo's wife in Havana, Farah. She assured him that Guillermo was a decent person who sent back money. She said he was traumatized by his mother's death that he couldn't return for. Guillermo Jr. is there. He carries a poster of his father into the room. The poster is bigger than him. I miss him, Guillermo Jr. says. I miss watching him fight. My father is my hero.
Because this decision to stay or go has affected every single Cuban family, whether they remain in Cuba or have left, as well over a million of them have, to the rest of the world and primarily in South Florida. So it tells you that it's like this civil war fought across 90 miles, and just no family has been left intact. It's a filthy, filthy war in terms of just the damage it's done in just devastating the family dynamic across an entire island of people.
Chapter 11. That sad face.
And then they give a 30-second or a 1-minute break. So that's it. We'll hear this beep first. And off she goes then for 2 or 3 minutes.
On the back wall, there are the posters of all the fights Gary and Rigo were involved with. Dallas, Las Vegas, New York, Japan, City West.
That's Rigondeaux and Cordo over here. Just on that poster, that was in Dallas in front of, like, that was my first big, big show. Yeah. That was like 60,000 people in the Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. And I kind of thought I made it then, you know.
Rigondeaux was to become world champion. Gary is now a successful boxing manager.
Yeah, that's it. That's about the best of it. That's all that's in me, both 5 punches.
They worked together for 7 years. An odd couple, like capitalism and communism.
Yeah, but there's no other word for it. No, I mean, I adore the kid. I adore him, and you know, and I don't believe that there's any bad bone at all in him. You know, he's true and he's straight when I'm with him.
At the end of the year, Gary's contract with Rigondeaux will run out. There is a dispute.
no matter what happens now, even if he was to turn nasty on me, you know, and say, oh, I don't want to go with you. Look, I've had 9 years with him. Mm. You know, like you can't just forget all those 9 years. You know, that buzz where you have the pins and needles in your head, where you have nerves, where you see his foot going into the sock when he's fighting Nonito Denier, who's a murderous puncher, and you're thinking, oh, please God, when his foot comes out of that sock, that he's after winning, or that he's after getting knocked out. And he's putting his foot into the sock, and you're saying, I hope the next time I see that foot, that he's after winning, or he's not after getting knocked out. You know?
I leave you with a story about Guillermo Rigondeaux winning a world title. It was in a Cowboy Stadium, Texas.
You know, to win a world title and to make hundreds of thousands of dollars from a guy who was making $20 a month when he won his second Olympic gold medal.
He's the saddest guy in that stadium. He's the world champion. And his head is down, and I can feel it. I know what's wrong. They're all jumping around him, and he's sad, and nobody can register why he's so sad. He's sad because of his family. He's sad because he's full of plastic people all around him. He's sad because he doesn't know who he is anymore. You know, he's a superstar boxer with all these people hanging off him. And for that moment, you can just, that shows me what Rigondeaux is, the sincerity of him. After he won that fight, he's so, so sad.
I drove Guillermo home from that fight, and he had the belt, which was almost bigger than him, in the back seat of the car. And I remember saying that to him, you just look so sad when you won. You look totally alone. And he was surrounded by, you know, his whole entourage. And he said, well, wasn't I alone? You know, who was really there? And I thought, you know, in my mind, it just turned to somebody stranded on a desert island collecting diamonds. Like, what do you do with them? Who can he really share the joy of this victory or the riches of this victory? I mean, all his family, everybody he's ever known, is on this island that he can never return to.